You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service.
Just on it. How does it go?
IE7, you're having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What do you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. The world of technology is an ever-changing feast of gadgets and software. When it comes to the world's most influential technological companies, would have to be those at the top of the list. Telecommunications companies globally provide the conduit for connectivity, but if it weren't for the hardware and software vendors, then life would not be as it is today. Some people embrace technology, and some treat it with contempt. Such is human nature. But the one thing that is here to stay is the rapid emergence of new and interesting gadgets designed to make our lives allegedly easier. A few weeks ago, I had the privilege of talking to Rico Malvar, the Managing Director of Research for Microsoft based in Redmond. Today, you'll get an insight into what and how we'll be doing things around the turn of the next decade. Rico was a founding member of the Signal Processing Research Group at Microsoft Research. His technical contributions at Microsoft include co-development of the Windows Media Audio digital audio format, image compression technologies for Microsoft Office, tablet PC, Xbox 360, and Flight Simulator X, new video transform and quantization techniques that were adapted into H.264, acoustic signal processing technologies for Windows Messenger, Microsoft Office Roundtable and Windows Vista, and co-development of the high-definition photo format for digital pictures, which is based on the upcoming JPEG XR standard. His technical interests include audio and video signal enhancement and compression, multi-rate signal processing, signal decompositions, fast algorithms, coding theory, and electronic hardware.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The G9 changed their name and put 5 mil on the government's table. Adam Turner talks to Zoho about giving Google a run for their money. And downloads are on the up as CD sales once again slump. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the new federal budget is blamed for technology job cuts. Apple's iTunes is targeted by a phishing scam. Telstra offers free laptops with business wireless plans. Information delays force the government to extend the broadband deadline. And digital radio is still scheduled for next year, despite delay. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Australian Nuclear Science and Technology Organisation, or ANSTO, has announced it is cutting 80 staff after the federal budget delivered on the 13th of May. ANSTO, which manages the Lucas Heights nuclear reactor in Sydney, also said it will be refocusing its activities in both research and operational areas and asked staff to volunteer for redundancy packages. And in more bad news for the technology sector, 200 AAPT call centre workers in Bendigo may also lose their jobs after the telecommunications giant announced plans to shift operations to the Philippines. Excelsia, which holds the AAPT contract, sent an email to staff last week explaining that AAPT would begin a three-month contract with a Manila-based company, Talitech, on the 23rd of June. A spokesperson for the Community and Public Sector Union, Mr. Dermot Brown, said that AAPT provided more than half the working contract for Excelsia, raising concerns the company might not survive if AAPT went offshore. Mr. Brown said that what is going on at Excelsia underlines the need for the government to do more to protect Australian jobs. Unscrupulous cyber criminals are now targeting iTunes, creating bogus websites that reportedly look like an iTunes billing page in an effort to scam users for credit card information. A spokesperson for email security vendor Proofpoint, Mr. Andrew Lockhart, said that people began receiving spam messages on Monday last week, telling them that they must correct a problem with their iTunes account. Mr. Lockhart told Computer World that Apple had never before been seen as a target, and that in addition to asking for credit card information, the phony iTunes pages also asked for social security numbers and other personal details. Mr. Lockhart warned people to be wary of clicking links in unsolicited email, and instead recommended that people bookmark or type in the URLs for sites which require personal or financial information, such as your bank or e-commerce sites like iTunes. After years of telecommunications companies luring customers with free handsets if they sign long-term contracts, Telstra has now begun what is likely to be the next industry trend, so-called free laptops. The Age Tech last week reported that Telstra has released a new plan for business customers which offers them a laptop and wireless broadband card at no upfront cost if they sign a 36-month contract. As well as the laptop, customers will get 1 gigabyte of data usage for $99 a month, although they must also pay 30 cents for each additional megabyte downloaded over the monthly quota. Because Telstra's standard 1 gigabyte NextG data plan costs $84.95, customers will effectively be paying $14 a month for the laptop, or $505 for the life of the 3-year contract. The federal government has extended its deadline for the National Broadband Network tender, bowing to pressure from Telstra's competitors after delays in providing bidders with crucial information about existing telecommunications infrastructure. Communications Minister, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, said that companies bidding for the $4.7 billion contract to build a national fibre network would have 12 weeks to consider network information from the date all material is made available. According to The Australian last week, Senator Conroy said that information about the existing network configuration had still not been provided to potential bidders, and that this information was crucial for companies wanting to bid for the tender. Opposition communications spokesman Mr. Bruce Bilson said the government should re-engineer the entire process before it ended in a train wreck. And digital radio broadcasting in Australia is still on track for 2009, despite an unexpected decision in the federal budget to postpone its commencement by 6 months. The announcement to shift the official start date from the 1st of January to the 1st of July was justified by the federal government as a means to provide commercial broadcasters with additional time needed to prepare for the introduction of digital radio. But Fairfax Media's Group General Manager for Radio, Mr. Graham Mott, said the company saw no reason to delay the plan to start digital broadcasting in January next year. Mr. Mott said, "We're somewhat perplexed as to why it's come out in such a manner, because there was no request by the commercial radio industry to delay it." Mr. Mott's sentiments were echoed by other industry pundits. Austereo Executive Chairman Mr. Peter Harvey said there was considerable merit in proceeding on January 1 for all of Austereo's metropolitan music stations. Digital broadcasting allows radio stations to broadcast images along with audio, with most digital radios to be equipped with screens. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Bill Gates is going to build a touch wall. Well, that's his vision anyway.
Computers can already sense your mood. When you're in a hurry, they slow down. When you're stressed, they crash.
The feature's been photocopiers for years.
Yes, that's right.
Well, let's talk about plasma displays, audio and these sort of devices. Is there really a delay in them?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's one way and sometimes it's the other.
I thought it was just me, my brain getting old and wearing out.
Oh, there is as well.
Just briefly, tell us what the difference is between 5.1 and 7.1 is.
A couple of speakers.
That's not brief. That's good.
Not too far from my local exchange. I plugged the modem in and the modem sync speed was about 15 megabits per second.
We'll dispel some of the rumours and fuel others, I think.
Subtitles louder?
No, but the braille's violent.
Wireless is not the answer for primary delivery.
Some of the Tasmanian user groups are a little bit sceptical about that.
Nah.
That's not a great story.
Oh, there he goes.
He knows. That's why he's here.
That's why we're paying the big bucks.
Absolutely.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And And welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Hello, everybody. Nice to be in your earphones again if you're listening to us on a pod or on your radio speakers. If you're driving around the car or anything, we've all managed to make it into the studio again for yet another week. It's a miracle this show sometimes comes to air. But here we all are. Dr. Ron, Graham, good evening to both of you.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew. As long as we're here before the microphones come on, that's the important thing.
Oh, they're palpitations at times, but nonetheless. oh, dear. And what a week it's been. We've had all sorts of things happening. Lots of correspondence. The competition's going really well. Mars has been attacked from Earth again, all sorts of things. If you're interested in our competition, we will be plugging it through the course of the show, but we're giving away a hard drive, a 1 terabyte Maxtor,
which is
Seagate,
huge, massive, 1 terabyte.
1 terabyte.
What
that's right.
Do with all that?
I don't know, but 1,000 gigabytes.
Yeah. There's some really good answers coming in because we don't really need to know the answer to your question, but we're going to be reading a few of them out later respect to what people have been putting in there. So, if you want a 1 terabyte hard drive for nothing, we're giving one away. Come along to our website.
From the Dr. Ron hard drive collection.
Actually, I've seen your collection, and I can vouch to the listeners that it's not from your collection.
No, it's kindly donated by the people at Maxwell.
It is. So jump online and register, and yes, we'll be announcing the prize on the 16th, I think. About 2 weeks down the track, our guest can draw it from the lucky hat or something. Dr. Ron, you've had lots of correspondence too, I hear.
Yeah, lots of correspondence, lots of follow-ups and feedback. We've got a new forum user. Hello to...
Just one
at the moment, since the last time we went through new forum users. Hello to Warlock. He or she says, I listened tonight for the first time on streaming. This is last week. Now, what do I listen to? On my iPod. Let me speak English. Well, this is the problem. You listen on the stream and... Yeah.
Well, there's plenty of options. You can
listen live. Send us an email because we're really...
You can go back into the historical archives. You can find shows from a year or two ago that had a fascinating topic. There's plenty of them. They're all online there.
That's true.
You can always download an old show and have a listen to that during the week if you happen to listen to the stream live.
That's a good point, Graham. The iTunes streaming isn't as good as the WMP one. So I grudgingly listened to that instead. I wonder why he was grudgingly listening to the Windows stream.
I don't know. We got Rico Malvar on the show tonight.
Yeah,
speaking of people who know things.
Indeed. Now, Warlock also says that there were no problems with the stream, but his monitor died 1 minute before the show started. Lucky he had a backup. Yeah, we hate it when that sort of thing happens to us as well.
His monitor? Screen monitor.
Blew up. Now, what else do we have here?
You don't need a monitor to listen to Tech Talk.
No, you don't actually. Once you kick it off, you can turn the monitor off.
That's right.
And throw it away. Towards the end of our last show, we're talking about fibre to the home and TV services being delivered on an IP network. Remember that?
Yes.
Jeff Gates says, hi guys, I think California is backwards in fibre connections because many people at the coffee shop surf on their computer rather than watching TV at home.
He doesn't live in California, though.
No, here in Ohio,
that's right.
Where Jeff is. Most major cities now have fibre to the node. I have VSDL and...
Oh, rub it in.
And TV delivered over Ethernet.
Oh, rub it in.
The
again.
East Coast...
VSDL?
VDSL, does he mean?
VDSL?
Yeah, it says VDSL. VDSL. It says VSDL, but I think it's supposed to be VDSL. And
how fast does that go? Anybody remember?
Pretty fast.
Faster than what we could ever imagine
megabits,
in this country.
Is that the 100 megabit one?
Maybe.
Hmm.
The east coast of the US and the southeast US is much better connected, where population density is higher. So thanks for that feedback, Jeff. Also, Phil Edmonds says, hi, gang. Just thought I'd drop you a quick email. As a regular listener to the podcast, I've tuned into the Shoutcast stream for the first time today, being lunchtime here in the UK. Sounding very good. This was last week.
Very good.
Not caught all of it, as I've got it on the PC at my desk.
Get back to work.
I've been coming and going. This will be most confusing when I come to listen to the podcast to pick up the missing bits.
Mm.
We find it confusing too, Phil, because we listen back sometimes and we think, did I really say that? Did that go to air?
You had that trouble too.
Was that part of our program? Yes, thank you for all the feedback. It's terrific to hear from you. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Yes, you can do it right now. We've got it all running. Hey, interesting in the news tonight too, this free laptop-y thing from Telstra. Is it a scam?
Is it a scam? He asks knowingly.
It's not a scam, but it's also not free.
Yes, I said free in the news.
There's no such thing as a free
lunch.
And especially, you cannot use free and Telstra in the same sentence. I'm sorry.
Well,
it's free in that they market $0 handsets and things with mobile phone plans.
Yeah, $0 means there's a cost.
It means that you're going to pay for it somehow, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not free. It's just no upfront cost. You pay for it as you go. You pay for it as you use it.
Yeah, well, they should say that.
You think it's a good idea?
No.
We'll give you a laptop if you lock into our plan for 3 years.
Well, we've had that.
Three years?
We've had that idea for a long time with mobile phones.
He's fallen off his chair.
Yeah, and that's right. And Andrew's problem with that is the 3-year contract on a wireless broadband plan. Now, how far have wireless broadband plans changed in the last 6 months?
Well, I think we were looking at the ABS statistics. That's the Australian Bureau of Statistics.
Yes.
A week or so back in relation to the fastest growing delivery method of mobile broadband, or broadband in general, and it was mobile broadband. Mm. It was wirelessly delivered technology over the airwaves, data coming to our phone, by that way.
Mm.
I guess if you think that if you're using technology now that you're using in 2005, you're still locked into a plan.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine if you'd signed up for a wireless broadband plan 3 years ago and you were still being forced to use that same plan today. You'd be really...
Well,
don't start me.
That's what that's what they're offering. 1 gigabyte of data and the laptop for $99 a month on NextG. I guess right now it would be good. 1 gigabyte of data for $99 bucks and a laptop on the
for most people, that's
gonna, damn fine.
That's going to do them. That's going to get them a little bit of web browsing. It's going to let them download their email. It's going to let them remote into their office if they've got that technology.
And right now, in 2008... halfway through, nearly, we are. That's not bad in Australia.
That's right.
In this day and age, and a laptop to boot. You know, you can pick up a laptop new with these cashback offers at the moment for around, you know, $500-$600.
Well, this works out to be about $505 for the life of the contract to actually buy the laptop.
Which, if you wanted to structure your payments over that length of time, it's not too bad. But in 3 years' time, and you're still paying for 3 years' old technology, and you're on a 1 gig plan, do they let you move? Because I don't know much about the plan.
I don't know.
Can you have more and pay more for bandwidth? Or are you stuck on 1 gig?
I haven't looked at the terms and conditions of this one in particular, but generally these sorts of companies will let you move up a plan but not down the plan.
Yeah, especially as the term of the contract sort of draws to an end. If you get to about the two-year mark or two-and-a-half-year mark, they probably ring you saying, yes, we'll move you on to a similar one or another one which is bigger and better.
Yep.
Adam Turner pointed me in a website today. People are blogging about it already. A lot of the headlines, things like freebies are tempting, but try to resist. this is a Hydra opinion, in our humble opinion, by Ian Grayson. If you have a Google for him, you can have a bit of a read up there. He's even used some of the... some of the tempting Telstra photography that you can get on their site for media releases. That's very funny, actually. But he goes on with a few things. Quick check of some of the latest model shows you don't get a whole lot of business notebook for $700. An example, Dell has a Vostro, if that's the way you pronounce it, 1400, which says it's for simplifying office computing, listed for $648. If you need to run anything more demanding than basic tasks, such as word processing, email, and web browsing, forget it.
You might be right there. You're going to get what you pay for. And if you're buying a $500 laptop, think about what you're going to get. You may be able to browse the web. You might be able to check email. But if you want to stoke up Adobe Photoshop or do something a bit more extravagant, you may not be able to.
But then again, if you do want a laptop in the field on mobile broadband and you just want to check emails, perfect.
Mm.
Absolutely perfect. Mars got invaded from Earth today before we get to the rundown because we're already behind, so why not?
Yeah, why not?
Graham, do you know anything about this? Oh, yeah, I've heard
know
a little, on the news.
No, a little bit about this, yeah. There's a,
should I be pushing this fader up or not?
No.
Okay.
we were hoping to have some reality audio from the control center, but it's not going to happen, unfortunately. But, a device called the Phoenix Mars Lander has landed on Mars.
Yeah, there was a bit of a uncertainty as whether it was going to do it. It was less than a 50% chance
yeah.
that it was actually going to land on of the poles, wasn't it?
That's right, and historically 50% of all the missions, you know, sending spacecraft to Mars have failed for one reason or another. So it's a difficult place to get the technology too reliably, but this time it worked.
And everyone's very happy because now we can look for life in the
that's
poles.
That's right. The idea is it's landed at the pole where there's ice just below the surface. It's got a robotic arm with a little digger on the end of it, and it can dig down about a metre, and it's got a laboratory on board that can analyse the samples that it digs up and find out if there's any evidence of... It probably won't find life frozen in the ice, but it might find evidence that life has been living in that water before it froze. So that's what it's going to be looking for. The really, the exciting stuff about the way it's landed is it's done a soft landing using thrusters. So the device arrived at Mars, entered the atmosphere, you know, classical space capsule style with a heat shield and a capsule behind it,
and landed on an ice
pack. Opened up a parachute to slow itself down. Dropped the heat shield off, and then when it was I can't remember the exact height off the ground, but several hundred metres off the ground. It actually let go of its parachute, went into free fall, and landed like the landing on the moon were with thrusters, but without anybody there controlling it. The machine was able to control itself to a soft landing using rockets, basically. Rockets aimed downwards.
Rather than hit the surface at speed with a parachute.
That's right, yeah. I mean, we've seen all sorts of technologies for landing things on Mars. They've had, big airbags that it's landed and rolled around in and all that sort of stuff. But this one actually did a landing like you'd land a manned spacecraft, but fully automatic.
When you think about it, it's been through, very cold temperatures. It's probably had a long time flying. How long did it take to get there, do you know?
Months it took. I would have it here.
But anyway, it took a long time to get there. It's been through hell and high water, I would suspect, by the time it got there. Then it managed to successfully...
It would have been shaken to death on its way out through, the launch rockets and
through our atmosphere.
Frozen to death on the way across.
Well done, those.
Then the front of the heat shield as it came in through the Mars atmosphere would have got to nearly the temperature of the surface of the sun.
Oh, my goodness.
But the temperature in the lander behind it would have only got to just above room temperature. So
isn't the technology amazing when it works?
It is fantastic what they did. The whole process, this is the other exciting thing, the whole process from when it entered the atmosphere to when it landed and sent back its first pictures, or began to take the first pictures to send back, 7 minutes. Okay, 7 minutes from when it entered the atmosphere to when it's sitting on the ground. Now,
very impressive.
The amount of time it takes a radio signal to get from Mars to Earth just at this moment is around about 10 minutes.
It was there before they knew.
So by the time they got the signals to say it was entering the atmosphere, it had already landed.
And started taking photographs.
Yeah, and they've already got photographs back. There's some fantastic photographs on the website. You go to
the URL?
Yep, www.nasa.gov, and it's all over the front page there. When it falls off the front page, www.nasa.gov/Phoenix, okay. And that'll take you to the mission page, and they've got all the photographs there. There's a dozen photographs there already, in fact, and it's only been down there a few hours. And it's taken photographs of itself to check out that everything's in the right place, and it's all looking fantastic at the moment. So
look forward to
very
some nice high res pictures in the not too distant future.
Oh yes, it's got a stereo camera. There'll be 3D pictures and all that'll be coming off the thing. It'll be fantastic.
Very good. There are people listening to us at the moment. Simon has just sent a email to us. 12 months warranty on a device other than 24 months with something that fails on you. Not good value in my opinion. So there you go. Some of our listeners are saying, "Ooh, be wary, the laptop offer."
Thanks, Simon. Lock into a 3-year contract, but you've only got a 12-month or 2-year warranty on the hardware.
Yeah, very hard paying for something that doesn't work.
Had that with phones too. Your only advantage is that if you do use more than the basic amount of usage of it, sometimes Telstra, once you get toward the end of your contract, will say, "Yeah, you've paid for enough of this that we can let you renew a contract, a new one, or whatever."
All right, Terrier. Do you know who Terrier is?
I didn't until this week.
Terrier.
Yes. It's the renamed G9.
Oh.
G9 have rebirthed themselves. They've come through a bit of a shake-up. And
in the absence of making any progress in terms of telecommunications.
Well, yes, they've moved a motion to rename themselves. Well done, lads. They're now known as Terrier. Telco Consortium. The G9 has renamed itself Terrier and confirmed its intentions to lodge the requisite $5 million bond for its national broadband bid before May the 23rd deadline. Derived from Terrier Australis, good for them, the newly named group continues to operate with the existing G9 membership, including AAPT, iiNet, Internode, Optus, Macquarie Telecom, Primus, Sol and Transact. So there you go. They've come to the party. They've put their $5 million on the table.
Yeah,
we were talking about Macquarie Bank doing a bit of that last week, or the rumours were out anyway. We don't know. I don't think they've done that yet. So anyway, they've finally put their little bond, which is due today, apparently, on the table. And the bond actually unlocks access to the network information provided by Telstra and other carriers and puts bidders into the competition to snare the $4.7 billion in funding for the fibre to the node.
Now that the government has extended the deadline for the tender.
Yeah, well, Conroy's been extending a lot of things today, recently. It's things are getting out of control again, I think, in the IT department. The federal IT, you know what I'm trying to say. So, but yes, the digital TV thing sort of blew up a bit today too, with the auctions for the Channel A and Channel B on the digital networks, and the potential rollout for digital radio in this country.
I was about to say they had controversy about the digital radio deadline being extended as well. What was this about the television? News about that as well.
They've gone back on the Senator Coonan. You know, they went into power. They achieved power thinking that everything was rosy, but it's not quite. We just have to go to a committee and just check it all out before things weren't quite so sweet. Even I think Conroy came out today and said that the previous Minister for Communications, Helena Coonan, said she was going to actually auction off the digital channel A and B's before the federal election, but thought twice about it when the election was called. So now they're having, incumbents are now having a bit of a think about it as well. So all this to-ing and fro-ing and stuff like that.
But they pushed back the start date for digital radio by 6 months as well.
Yeah, and the broadband network. The federal government has bowed to pressure from Telstra's rivals to extend its deadline for the national broadband network tender because of delays in providing bidders for the multi-billion-dollar contract with the crucial information about the existing network infrastructure.
Yeah, because
is it ever going to happen? Excuses.
It's because the government didn't pull their finger out and put enough pressure on Telstra to release the information that was required.
Yep, and then to add salt to the wound, Telstra Chief Executive Sol Trujillo recently claimed the cost of the national broadband network has almost doubled in the past 3 years to $15 billion. And this is 3 days before the close of tenders to build the service.
That's the one.
What's going on here?
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, dear. Is this all muckraking and, just shaking the cage before we bolt it down and then commit to 12 megabits per second, fibre to the node, to every house in Australia?
I like Mr. Bilson's comment, who's the opposition communication spokesman. He said the government needs to re-engineer the entire bid process, quote, before it ends in a train wreck, unquote.
Oh, look, if we had any more committees, subcommittees and all that sort of thing.
Standing committees, working parties,
absolutely.
Consultative groups.
Yes. Absolutely. We'll be here until the turn of the next millennium, I think, before we get some half-decent broadband. So, anyway. Aussies lose millions of dollars to Nigerian scammers. We've spoken about the old 419 things again, but it's still back in the main press again.
More millions.
Nigerian authorities are presently prosecuting 9 advanced fee, whatever that might be, fraudsters who conned unsuspecting Queenslanders. But millions of dollars continues to flow out of African scammers, Queensland police warned.
Is it only Queenslanders that fall for this?
Well,
yes,
it is.
Is that what this report says?
It is, allegedly.
I don't believe that.
No, I know. We have a lot of people in Queensland, but unfortunately, a lot of, with the people who are keeping records of Nigerian scammers, apparently, out of all the Australian states, Queensland is the, they have the road toll, you know what I mean?
It's called advance fee fraud, because
I'll pop this into your account.
Yes, that's right. The type of fraud means that you send us an advance fee for us doing something on your behalf, and it never happens.
Mm. I can't believe the amount of spam that's around at the moment. You know, looking for you just do a send and receive on your email client, and you'll get something phishing coming in the door.
You get a dozen a day from someone purporting to be the Bendigo Bank.
I don't know. Who have I got today?
Today's Bank of Queensland during the week as well. I got hammered by spam.
Yeah, all the banks seem to have a go in turn, don't they? Yeah. I have seen some Bendigo Bank ones recently.
Mm. The kits, apparently, are very easy to get hold of. So
you just go and download
a kit and become your own, go fishing, so to speak.
I'm not a customer of a mainstream bank, so whenever I see an email like that, it just automatically gets deleted.
And the thing that's a telltale sign for us is the we get a lot of these spamming things on the feedback account at Tech Talk Radio.
Oh,
Let me tell you, we don't use that email account for doing internet banking on, do we? Well, I don't.
Something I've been meaning to tell you.
I don't either. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it was you, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. AAPT, that funny telecommunications company and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, they're in the news for all the wrong reasons as well.
Absolutely. 200 workers at Bendigo call centre may be out of a job after telecommunications company is going to move it to the Philippines.
I got really angry when I heard this on commercial radio during the week. I thought everything that people are doing at the moment is that they're trying to, where they've offshored this sort of function and they've outsourced things to other countries, they're in the process of bringing it all back because people are absolutely screaming about poor service, poor quality, not being able to understand the people they're speaking to. And then AAPT go and announce that, no, we're going to move 200 jobs offshore to Manila.
Oh.
I thought, can't you learn by other people's mistakes? And apart from the obvious situation where they're going to be doing people out of jobs here.
It is. It's somewhat sad in a lot of respects.
It's bizarre. It's really bizarre. If you're an AAPT customer, you'd be thinking, why?
You've got to keep something locally because people know the locations. People know the culture. It's like ringing Hutchison's. You speak to a person in Mumbai or wherever they might happen to be.
Mm.
And it is. It's
there's a lot of ISPs out there.
You can't kick up a conversation about the footy or anything, can you? Oh,
There's a lot of ISPs out there. There's a lot of different arrangements that they have with their customer service. We're open different hours, available in different ways. And it's just one more thing that you can consider when you're shopping around for who's going to connect up your broadband.
There really is. In fairness to AAPT, they're not actually sacking the people or closing a call centre. They actually contract another company, and that company's name is Excelsior. So AAPT said they're not going to renew a contract. Excelsior run the call centre.
It's a cop-out. I mean, if they've got someone under contract to provide the service, then they're setting the terms on which that contract is fulfilled. So if AAPT didn't want their customer service to go overseas, then they'd, you know, back out of the contract or put in the contract that it must be provided in Australia or something like that. AAPT are letting it happen. There's
That's
no two ways about it.
Yep.
Don't let them off the hook.
How are your downloads going? You downloading lots of music lately, boys? Hope you're doing it the right way.
Always.
Yeah. Pleased to hear it. I actually bought something off iTunes the other day, would you believe?
Did you?
What bit rate? And I realised why you don't buy things off iTunes.
not value for... What do you say that? Not value for money? Or?
No. It's just the watery thing. I actually went down and bought the album later from the local record shop, so it was one of those things. In fact, there's another thing, not that I'm going to talk about it now, but there's a couple of companies around which actually sell CDs online, and you get them within 24 hours. Much better than using the iTunes things or something like that.
And what do you mean they arrive in 24 hours?
Well, you order it, and it's in your mailbox, or a little man brings it to your door the next day.
Snail mail.
Or courier mail.
Courier mail.
But it's tangible, physical, CD.
But I can go to my CD shop around the corner and have them today.
Well, that's very good for you, but what if you don't have a CD shop around the corner?
I have. I've got a bright yellow one.
Well, what if you haven't got one? What if you live a bit further afield and you've got the bright yellow one is just being blip on the horizon?
Well, then I don't know how good your courier service would be if you're that far away from civilization.
Let me tell you, the point that I'm trying to make is that it's been fantastic because I haven't got time to go to the little yellow one. I've got one close to me as well.
Yeah, that's a big problem,
isn't
it?
And it just rocks up in the mailbox. It's fantastic.
I buy DVDs that same way.
UK performers and publishers now earn more money from broadcasts and legal downloads than copyright income earned from CD sales, according to the latest figures. This is out of the UK. Now, these guys, which collect rights on behalf of UK songwriters and publishers, report the overall growth in income of 2.8% over 2007, despite an 11% decline in physical sales. So there you go. Online stuff is actually starting to work for things. So is the future of the CD sort of looking terminal, or do you think we're still going to go on with CDs? Because I must admit, I would buy a CD any day over a download, unless the download got to being, you know, 320k MP3 or something.
Yeah, that's the thing. It stays numbered when the technology starts to compete with it properly. At the moment, as you say, the CD quality is so much better, and there's still going to be a market for it.
People are becoming more discerning, too.
They are, yeah.
As equipment gets better, headphones get better.
Yep.
GD's just sent us an email saying, why don't you use Gmail? He's used them for 3 years and never get their spam. Or never get spam. Not their spam, but spam in general. He's singing the virtues of... I actually do use a Gmail account, but life's pretty interesting with spam at times, isn't it? Dr. Ron, you sent me a very interesting spam the other day. Well, it wasn't a spam as such. It was in relation to Google and what the Google camera catches when they drive through streets of the United States.
That was bizarre, wasn't it?
We'll have to put a link up on the webpage or something for this, but...
Someone just sent it to me.
In Chicago. Watch out if you live in South Chicago.
It said have a look at what the Street View...
Yeah, if you're unfamiliar with Street View, Google have been driving the streets of major cities these days and putting a little camera on the roof of their car. And they've been getting into a fair bit of strife. I wouldn't say trouble, but, you know, there's a lot of controversy out of some of these.
Certainly is.
And this picture that Dr. Ron was a man with a handgun pointing at another person as the Google van was driving up this so-called...
Pretty scary thing to have...
quiet little street in Chicago.
Yeah.
Mm.
Pretty scary thing to have going on. But, yeah, they've caught all sorts of interesting things, haven't they? Caught people coming in and out of places where they shouldn't have been and... You know, revealing personal details, people in people's driveways and stuff like that. So,
really?
If you're not doing anything wrong, got nothing to worry about.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Ron. Voice of the establishment
over
there.
Yeah, that's right. Proudly sponsored by George Orwell.
Yes.
I think on that note, we'll take a break. We'll be back with Adam Turner's View from the Couch and more just after this.
Recently on Tech Talk Radio, we heard Ben-Hur Castro from Seagate in the United States talk about the new generation of portable hard drives, which not only backs up your files with the push of a button, it also password protects the contents of your drive. Not only does the MaxStor OneTouch 4 Plus provide backups, data storage and protection for your files, it also protects your entire computer system in case of disaster. Now for the good news. Thanks to MaxStor, Tech Talk Radio has a 1 terabyte version of the OneTouch to give away to a lucky Tech Talk Radio listener.
anywhere in the world, valued at $299. All you have to do is visit the Tech Talk Radio website and tell us in a few short words why you need 1 terabyte of storage. How easy is that? We'll announce the winner on air on Monday the 16th of June. So what are you waiting for? Visit techtalkradio.com.au right now and you could be the proud owner of a 1 terabyte, one-touch portable hard drive.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Andrew McComb here, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, just looking at the VU meters here. It works. I'm impressed. speaking of things working, the internet's a very hit and miss thing at times, isn't it? Depending upon the traffic that's out there. We've had a few emails this evening saying, the stream's breaking up, we can't hear you. And yet others say, no, it's working perfectly. Those of you trying to tune into us through Optus, I don't know, we haven't said anything untoward about Optus, have we, this evening?
Not yet, no.
No, exactly. That's all. I don't know. Can't explain that.
The connection between Optus and us is a bit narrow, is it?
I don't know.
A bit choked up with data.
Andrew, I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry to hear your woes, but nonetheless, there you go. He also went on to say that he thinks we have a good podcast. I hope that's the way I'm reading that correctly.
What were his exact words?
It says, cool show, thanks for the weekly fix. Tried other Aussie tech podcasts, and let me say there is no comparison.
Yeah, so that could be good or bad.
And he's got a smiley on the end of it, not a wink or anything like that. So anyway, okay. Thanks, Andrew. Anyway, I'm sorry you can't.
Thanks, Andrew.
We'll talk in bits and stops and starts for you. on the stream.
Stream.
Absolutely.
That's really annoying. Sorry.
Technology is a wonderful thing when it works, as we were just discussing with the lander. It landed, all that sort of stuff.
Yes. Now,
speaking of technology not working, and a coronet your heart out.
Yes.
If you're in the Northern Territory, consider yourself exceptionally lucky if you're hearing our podcast or listening to us at all. Graham, what happened on the weekend? Someone tripped over the extension lead in Alice Springs.
Before we discuss what happened in Alice Springs, let's discuss what's happened in the studio tonight.
Yeah, because I had all the information about this on that tab on my notebook, and Dr. Ron made me open up something that's crashed my web browser.
Good on you, Dr. Ron.
So I can't bring it back up. What happened was, someone, I assume it's something like someone put a backhoe through it.
Someone outside of Alice Springs.
A major phone line, somewhere outside of Alice Springs. Somebody cut a cable and took most of the Northern Territory's mobile phone network off the air.
The thing that got the big laugh in the studio was the TAB lost so much money.
Lost $500,000, they reckon, because people in the Northern Territory couldn't get a bet on. So,
oh my goodness!
There's
technology.
Apparently, it was off for 5 hours with no phones, and not a real good look for Telstra. Yeah, someone obviously they need to get their technician to somewhere outside of Alice Springs, and
it goes to show how dependent rural communities are on just single transmission systems.
That's right, just take out one cable like that and take such a...
Have you ever driven the road, the Stuart Highway, between Port Augusta and Darwin?
I have.
You know those little boxes every 44 kilometres? You can almost set your speedo bike when you drive up there.
And little optic fibre repeater stations.
Absolutely.
What are they in, like little tumble-down track, like... Yeah, iron shacks or something like that.
Brick buildings on the side of the road.
Yeah, they used to have microwave towers and then they went optical, put glass down all the way up there. So
that's right. You could see the for miles on the approach to it. You could see the tower up on the horizon.
Yeah, the big walk on top of it.
That's right. You'd know you'd driven another 100 kilometres, another 50 kilometres. Sort of
day way. When radio was romantic. AM radio, microwave links. Now we all use optical fibre. Goodness me. Now, what do you know about Zoho? Dr. Graham? Dr. Ron? Anyone?
I know nothing about Zoho. What's Zoho?
Now, I've got a confession to make here as well. This old show's unravelling, isn't it?
It is. Adam's got something to say about it very shortly.
As the day goes on. Zoho was going to be a website of the week, and it may very well still be, if we don't get more anymore connection happening. Yeah, we've got another hour yet. Anything could happen. Just stay tuned and you'll find out. Now, Zoho is an online, not even looking at my notes here, an online collaboration system. It gives you an internet-based word processor, spreadsheet application, presentation application, accounting package. It's amazing, the stuff that they've got available there online that's free, and it's got a fantastic user interface.
Now, I haven't seen this yet, but let Adam tell us all about it, but it's going to give Google and Microsoft a bit of a scare.
From what I've seen, it really will.
So let's hear Adam's view from the couch, because he caught up with one of the people behind Zoho at CeBIT, I believe.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
To many people, Google seems unstoppable. but there are a few companies out there really giving the search behemoth a run for its money. Last week at the CeBIT IT trade show in Sydney, I caught up with Sridhar Vembu, the CEO of a company called Zoho, which offers a suite of online office applications that provide more features than Google's offering and come very close to Microsoft Office. Vembu has big plans for the online office, and both Google and Microsoft are taking notice. Here's what he had to say.
One question I want to ask you, and something I was looking at, is through your mobile portal, can you edit documents or only view them?
Actually, there's some editing provided, but mostly viewing now.
Yeah.
Problem is their mobile browsers have some limitations.
Yeah.
In the next version of the iPhone software, they're going to fix that. So primarily we're focused on iPhone because it has the most sophisticated browser.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we will support the IE browser in the Windows Mobile.
Yeah.
So, but there is, in each case, there are going to be some limitations. You know,
yeah.
It's not going to be the entire feature set, but with some limitations, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just partly a lack of standardization in the mobile browsers is the problem.
I mean, only after the iPhone, the mobile browsing has really taken off in any significant way.
So, from the iPhone hasn't officially been released here yet. They're around. I've got one in my pocket. In the US where the iPhone is around, can you see from your logs, do you have a large percentage of iPhones?
Yes, actually, almost 70-80% of mobile users are iPhone. Even
70
Google,
to 80, did you say?
Yeah. Because even I have a regular phone with a browser,
yeah,
but it's so tiny and so difficult to use.
Yeah.
I rarely even go to the browser.
Yeah.
But once I got the iPhone, it's really a lot.
Yeah. That's why I find the same thing. My iPhone, I could do the same thing on Windows Mobile device.
Yeah.
There's so much mucking around that I don't bother. With the iPhone, it's much easier.
Much easier, yeah. An email system is in private beta.
Yeah.
We are just extending the invitation, slowly expanding. By about July 1st week, it should launch in public.
So. That sort of ties into another question I was going to ask is, of the breadth of services that you offer, which is the one that brings people in?
Yeah. So today there's two. One is Zoho Writer,
The
word processor, just simply because people like it's more polished, more features than Google, that's one. Another one is actually Zoho Creator.
Yeah.
That's an online, there's no analog in Google at all. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's simply, if you want to keep track of some structured data,
mm-hmm.
forms and views, particularly in a small business, but even some independent professionals.
Yeah.
That's something that's doing really
so
well.
So it's sort of like a database in a way.
Yeah, database, online database. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you think that for Google, I would think that the main thing that would bring people in would be the mail,
right.
And then from that. So is that one of the reasons you hope that adding a mail component will?
Absolutely, I think that would add to it. And second is that we are going after the people, the power user or the people who appreciate the breadth and depth. Particularly as a journalist, for example, you want a really good word processor.
Yeah.
So that's how we are targeting it right now.
Yeah.
And we recognize that simply the Google's brand and reach is going to get them most of the consumers. But then as people get a taste, it's like how once Starbucks entered the market, other more specialized coffee shops actually flourished.
Yeah.
As people develop a taste for good coffee.
Yeah.
That's the same thing is happening in this market.
Yeah.
So to a large extent, Google is actually helping us, creating a market.
They're raising the level. For
exactly.
Yeah.
Everyone.
So, I see that you're going to do a tie-in with Omni.
Mm-hmm.
That's not available yet. That's still a beta sort of thing as well, isn't it?
Which one?
Is it Omni? Online storage?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you tell me what you'll be able to do with that?
Yeah. So, we actually have partnerships with multiple storage vendors
mm-hmm.
where you upload files, documents,
yeah.
and stuff, and then you open it and edit it with Zoho.
Yeah.
You don't need to download it. So, that's how our partnerships work. It's Box.net and variety of storage vendors now
yeah.
we have online storage vendors that we have now partnerships with including OmniDrive, and that's how and we ourselves are not planning to offer a storage system because we really want to focus on the application not the storage part.
Will it be possible when you say combining Zoho with Omni that I could keep my documents in the cloud in Omni edit them with Zoho, but then automatically back them up from Omni to my desktop, or say FTP sync once because that's what makes me nervous about using these things, and I would think I'm not the only one, is that my documents are living in the cloud, and if I'm using your service or if I'm using Google Docs, there's no easy way for me once a day to say, back all these up to my desktop.
We are actually going to even do better than that. Yeah. We are actually going to back, for example, documents automatically sync with Google.
Yeah.
So you have two copies of it, one in Zoho, one in Google.
Ah, okay.
So we are actually working on, in other words, we don't treat Google as the enemy.
Yeah.
In fact, to a large extent, they are defining an ecosystem. We very much are partners with them. For example, we use Google Gears as a plugin to offline editing.
Yeah.
And they are a very open company that wants to nurture this cloud ecosystem.
Yeah.
Because they realize that we all win together.
Yeah.
The enemy is Microsoft, really.
Yeah. Is there a certain amount of people that will never think about touching a service like this until there is a way to ensure the documents are local and not just in the cloud?
Yes, I definitely there is, but it's like anything else, the resistance kind of goes down with time.
Yeah.
I know today there are people coming who said a year ago, I'll never use an online app.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, it's just younger people have no such resistance for. You're 15-year-old, you're 18-year-old, you're just simply trying. But when someone is like 35, 40, they are used to a certain way of doing work, it takes them longer. But I am really 100% confident it's just a matter of time. As they try it, as they experience the power of it, then they...
Between Google and Microsoft and what Google offers and what Microsoft are talking about offering, like your live messaging and stuff, which do you see as the biggest challenge to what you do?
I would say, really, definitely now Google is the one real challenge because they have a real solution. Microsoft is tackling that. They don't have it yet. But longer term, I think Microsoft is going to be formidable. I definitely don't underestimate them. But they do face a strategic challenge, which is they lose money by doing this.
Yeah.
They have a $20 billion cash cow, 90% profit margin.
Mm.
It's damn hard to like voluntarily give that up or reduce it. So that's the challenge they have to tackle.
Mm.
So it's really not a technology challenge, more a business model challenge.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Boy, here it all comes. We've got Microsoft's Mesh, we've got the Google juggernaut doing their stuff, and now Zoho.
Now Zoho. How exciting is that?
What are consumers going to use? Like, if I was a general consumer and had no idea, I'd be throwing my hands up in the air. Do you go with the incumbent, with Microsoft, because it's out there, or do you give the others a go? What do you do?
Well, Microsoft are going to have a leg up on that because they're going to have existing documents in their format and all that sort of stuff. It's going to, you know, it already works in Word and Excel. Google, but they've also got a good foot in the door because everybody uses Google to search. There's not a person on the planet who doesn't use Google to search.
Over 80% of this market does it. That's using .com.au, that's for sure.
And the clever thing that Zoho has done is they've allowed you as a first-time user to log in using your Google credentials. If you've got a Google or Gmail account, or if you've got a Yahoo account, you can log in with your Yahoo credentials. So,
Google account, did you say?
Yeah, you can log in with
How did they get that?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It actually goes off to a Google page and says you're about to provide these details to this third party, to Zoho, to log you in. Are you happy with that?
So really?
Yes, I am. Yeah. So it's very clever how it works.
Very good. I'm going to have to give this a go.
Google and Yahoo. On the front page. Cool.
Definitely.
Mm. Oh, good. Well done. Thank you. That was Adam Turner. He was up. You've got some feedback. You're waving something at me, haven't you?
I've got some feedback.
I've got some more feedback too. Apparently, Optus is not looking after some of the customers this evening.
Oh, what? What's going on?
Oh, hang on. There you go.
Sorry. I'll go with my feedback. Yes, is this for some good feedback? Dear Tech Talk Radio people, would you believe I've been taken out to dinner for my wedding anniversary? Now I am parked eating my sundae, ice cream sundae, I'm presuming, on a hill, looking over the city, listening to some computer nerds talk on the radio. love from Cherie. I think I know who that is. Hello, Cherie, and hello to Cherie's husband.
Okay, very good. Yes, there are some emails come in now. Andrew, he's saying that his Optus now works. Adam saying he's having problems with his Optus tonight, and Jeff was saying his Optus is choppy too, and that's the end of it. So if you're with Optus, maybe there's an issue this evening, I'd be suspecting.
Mm.
Let's talk about Microsoft. They've got into the cashback deal. Everyone's going cashbacks these days for laptops and all sorts of things. Well, Microsoft, no exception. And they've launched a new cashback search service. Did you hear that? A search service. Cashback on a search.
So do I get paid for searching?
Well, apparently, this cashback search that pays users a rebate for buying products they've found through the company's Windows Live search engine.
Ooh.
Yes. Everyone's skeptical, looking around the room going, Live search cashback is the latest attempt by the world's largest software maker to draw users to its online search engine. When all else fails, pay them. It's really what they've come down to, which is a distant third behind market leader Google and Yahoo. Distant by a long distance, let me tell you. So that's what Microsoft's had to resort to try and drum up some usage. On. I don't know whether that's globally or Australian or what, but...
would have to be a Microsoft partner that you were purchasing from, I'm thinking out loud here.
The user who buys that item from a retailer site will get a 2 to 30% of the purchase price back as a rebate. Consumers would have to sign up for a free Windows Live cashback account to participate in the program, and rebates would be issued after a 60-day waiting period to make sure there are no return products. Mr. Gates said Microsoft would partner with more than 700 retailers, including eBay, Barnes & Noble, Sears, and Home Depot. Very American stores there, but that's like Bunnings.
If they partner with eBay, that's good, because we can force pay with PayPal. And
yeah, if there's 700 partners there, you never know what might happen.
Get some credits back from Microsoft. There you go.
So it's an interesting thing. It always was going to be the question down the track, how are people going to claw their market share back from the incumbent, or from Google? You know, there's such a juggernaut out there. They've just got the whole search, and as you were saying, Graham, covered. What chance do the others have? Well, they're going to have to buy you back, so...
In lieu of actually having better search technology.
Yes.
Oh, well, cynical.
There's a big, yes, spade
is spade. Is that not a fair call?
No, it's cruel but fair. not winning people over on the merits of their search technology. Yeah. We'll just, offer hard cold cash
People will change to a better product. They change from Yahoo to Google.
Yes.
When Google came out and was better.
Yeah. Well, I think it's creatures of habit. Like, what do you type when you go to a search engine? You just type Google.
If someone came out with something that was radically better, like Google did, I used to be absolutely, fixed on Yahoo. Yahoo search was fantastic. Google came out, Google was better, switched to Google. When someone comes up with something that's radically better, we'll switch to it.
It's the same what we're seeing with web browsers now. The uptake of Firefox is going on the up and up and up and up, and IE is levelled out, if not starting to slide.
Yeah, but IE is a dog of a browser, and excuse me for saying that, I'm a developer, and it's got more bugs in it than you can care to poke a stick at.
Yeah, that's the reason why I was by Andrew McColl.
Having said that, we're an independent broadcaster here. We have Rico Malvar coming up very shortly.
From Microsoft.
Web browsers. Well, actually, I don't think he doesn't have that claim to fame, I'm sure, but Rico Malvar is the managing director of Microsoft Research based in Redmond in the United States. He's had his fingers in a lot of pies.
He might be working on a better search algorithm.
He is. Now, I had a chat to him a couple of weeks back, and it was a fascinating. They only gave me half an hour, and we talked for an hour. Worked that out, but that was really good. We had a good chat. And the first part, we're going to talk a little bit about mobile devices and things like that and where we're going to go. But Rico, in essence, is the helmsman of where new products and services are coming from the world's largest manufacturer of computer software. So very interesting man to have a chat to. And he's coming up just after this.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Eddie's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped in the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking to the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on Eat, Pray, it goes, and you get a whole service. Just on
how does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Recently, I had the privilege of speaking with Rico Malvar. He's the Managing Director of Research for Microsoft in the United States. We had a good chat for around about an hour or so, and today we're going to present to you part one of our discussion. Rico was a founding member of the Signals Processing Research Group at Microsoft, which involved communications and collaboration systems and knowledge tools. He's had a finger in almost anything and everything Microsoft has done, including Microsoft Office, tablet PC, Xbox 360 and Flight Simulator. Some of his technical interests include audio and video signal enhancement and compression, multi-rate signal processing, signal decompositions, fast algorithms, coding theory and electronic hardware, to name just a few. I would have thought that Rico would have had one of the most envious jobs in the world, especially for anyone who's interested in technology. In fact, that was the first question I posed to him when I spoke to him a few weeks ago. Rico, you probably have one of the most envious jobs in the world, in fact, a dream job in some people's eyes, developing and building what could potentially be the next big technological device which could change our lives as we know it. How did you get to be the Managing Director of Research at Microsoft?
Oh boy, that's a good question. Sometimes I ask that myself. I don't know if I have the answer. But what I can tell you is that it's a lot of fun, because we have so many research groups here in many different areas, and you just walk around the hallways here and you bump on researchers and they tell you their new ideas and in all kinds of ideas, and it's very exciting.
It would certainly be interesting, I think, around the water fountain or in the coffee room at your place, sitting down there just having a bit of a chat and talking about technology. What sort of happens? Is that how you do your think tanks these days?
Yeah, you know, there's a little bit of formal approaches, because they are all researchers and good ones, and they follow some approaches of trying to improve some technologies, and also some dreaming late at night. And as you said, the conversations while sipping through coffee or something like that. So it's a very relaxed environment. And, because we have a collection of researchers in many different areas, one good thing about that, particularly good thing, is that then ideas click. You have a psychologist talking to a hardcore computer scientist, and suddenly they invent something new that neither of those two individually have thought of before.
One of the more interesting challenges, I guess, would be convincing consumers to adapt to new technology or even give it a go. Like in Australia, for example, we like mobile technology here. We'll embrace it without a second thought. But what about the new technologies? How are people, you mentioned psychologists before, how do you sort of roll into the equation how people are going to adopt with technology before you even build it?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned mobile, which is a super important thing. So, for example, one thing that we just kind of released as a beta from LiveSearch with a lot of help here from research is searching in your mobile phone with voice. Because if you're at a computer and you want to search, you can open a search page, there is a little window, and you can type the words you want. But if you're on the street with your mobile, typing, even if your mobile has the keys, they are very small, and it's easy to mistype. But it actually has a nice screen. So it's better to do a multimodal thing where you speak the words of the search you're looking for. I don't know, restaurant, ABC, or whatever you're looking for, and then you get the results in the screen. And you can click on those results, And from there on, you can follow up a more more traditional navigation. But that combination of using voice and using keys at the same time can help the user quite a bit.
So you're saying predictive text is dead. We're going to not be interacting with keyboards anymore, which I'm very happy to hear about, Rico. And we're going to go more down the voice side of things. So how does a device discern about what you're asking for or whether you're on a call? Like, for example, if I ring you up and say, hey, can you give me a colleague's phone number? How do you interact with a device and talk on the phone at the same time? Surely there'll be something you may not want your caller to hear.
Right. That is a good question. And we have to be able to distinguish. And one idea is that if you're firing up the search, you basically first start your web browser in your phone. The interface we have is very simple. And then it puts a little window. But instead of you typing, there is a little extra button that says, speak your question. So you press that thing first, and then you say a few words. And as soon as your pause is long enough, it then absorbs those words and does the processing. And then it knows the context now that you're not talking to somebody else. You're actually talking to the phone.
Speech recognition has traditionally been a fairly, hit-and-miss sort of technology. Where are we going with it? How accurate is it becoming?
Another good question. You're completely right. Speech recognition, it hasn't been much reliable. Especially, you imagine, in a mobile phone. Because you may trying to... You're on the street, you want to have lunch, and you're trying to find a restaurant, and it's a noisy street. So we have two key recent developments that helped quite a bit. One is to make sure that the context you're looking for, the grammar and the words, the dictionary you're looking for, are restricted to what's likely to be your answers, to what's likely. If you're looking for restaurants, I can just build a table of all the restaurants in a particular city in Australia and just look at those words. So that helps quite a bit. Another one is the signal processing technologies where you can, for example, if you have a couple of microphones instead of only one in your phone, and some are coming up this way, you can correlate the signals with a lot of math and basically filter out all the outside noise and get just the voice of the person. As you combine those, it becomes a lot more reliable.
All right, let's look at a bit about the back end of this sort of technology, Rico. Databases need to be built, which would probably be in the realms of the telecommunications companies. How would they be? Would they be keen to adapt this sort of technology? I know the major ISPs and providers like Microsoft and the Googles are already developing these sort of technologies. Is it going to stay at a global level, or will it come back to a local telco level?
That's a good question. It could. It's probably a combination of the two, because we can build some databases. And you can have some interfaces between the telco databases and our own. And in the limits, the telco could just ship the bits to us, right? And we do everything and ship the information back. But on the other hand, sometimes the telcos have their own, like, for example, white pages lists or yellow pages lists. And you can do a combination of the two. And in fact, just to tag a little bit on that, we actually have good developments on database technology that allows you to convert from one model of database with one particular schema to another one in an almost automatic way, not quite, but almost fully automatic, which means that looking from the telco side, absorbing all that information or passing that information along to us becomes really easy.
You've just attended, members of your group have just attended the Computer Human Interface, CHI 2008 in Italy. What did you learn there?
Well, it's a fascinating place. I wasn't there myself, but many of our researchers were, and we presented 20 papers there, a very large number actually. And there's always interesting ideas on new ways of interacting with a computer. For example, I'll mention one of the papers we presented called Blind Sight, where basically sometimes you're talking to somebody. Suppose I'm talking to you and we're trying to set up a meeting and we're trying to decide on a date and on a time, but I need to check my calendar. And my calendar is on the phone. But if I put the phone in a way that I can see it, now I'm actually not talking to you anymore. I may not be able to hear you. So there's this conundrum that if I put the phone to my ear, I can't see the screen anymore, right? So the idea is that by typing in a few keys, we can actually convert, navigate, let's call it this way, we can navigate through your calendar with voice prompts. So as you're kicking, and you tactile feedback to know where your fingers are, so basically you advance, you go to the next day, and you can also use a speech. So you can use a combination of keys, speech, and voice feedback from the computer, from the cell phone to you. So, for example, you can say, am I free on Wednesday? And then it can answer to you. Or you can just click on the button and the phone tells you, oh, you're now in Wednesday. Your morning is free. And then you can tell the person, oops, my phone just told me I'm free on Wednesday morning, so let's set our meeting for Wednesday morning. So you can actually navigate without the need to have the screen in front of you.
Are our cell phones going to change in their look and feel because of this sort of technology? Like, we're used to a traditional phone where we put it up to our ear. It's a relatively small device. Even in today's technology, I've actually noticed that they're starting to get larger again. You look at some of the new devices, they're flat screen. You interact with them with your fingers rather than pushing buttons. Are we going to see the evolution of this sort of hardware to match this new technology that's coming out?
I think so. The idea, as you said, where you have more screen with navigation through soft buttons is a good idea. It's something people have been working on for a long time, and we're working on that as well. And it brings some interesting challenges in terms of the interfaces. So that is a direction that we're going to see. Another one is the cameras and the cell phones getting really better to the point where you're not going to really need another camera. Just the camera and your cell phone will be good enough. For example, to the point where, remember when I mentioned that you're trying to find a restaurant, for example, you're on the street, you're trying to find a restaurant, you use a search. What if you have a slightly different scenario? You are on the street, you walk by a restaurant, and you see the restaurant, and you say, should I go in there to eat or not? Then you pick up your cell phone, take a picture of the facade of the building, and then we can search based on that picture. And then we bring to the screen to you data about the restaurant, the menu, and information about reviews. And then you can quickly browse through that information and then decide if you want to go in or not.
So you're really going to have a restaurant critic in your hand as you're walking down the street looking for a place to dine. I think that's quite exciting. Let's talk about one of the other technologies which has been with us for a little while, which is GPS, the Global Positioning System. How are we going to interact with that? Obviously, you mentioned walking down the street. It's your device is going to know where we are. But it seems that we're becoming more and more reliant on location devices because, after all, if you look at the planet, most of our databases have a geospatial reference of some kind to it. We're going to be relying more and more on this sort of positioning technology as well?
Yes, and in fact, we don't actually need necessarily GPS, especially if you are in a populated area with lots of businesses around and lots of Wi-Fi around, for example. We can use the Wi-Fi signals to locate you. In fact, in many cases, with better precision than the GPS. And then imagine we can give you directions, very precise directions. Like, for example, you're walking, and then there's some stairs that you need to go to the subway station, and we can tell you, oh, go down the stairs, the ones that are 30 yards ahead of you or 20 meters ahead of you or something like that. And that can be quite useful as well.
Wi-Fi is a very contentious issue in our country at the moment. We don't have very many hotspots. If anything, it's really only in the major city-centric areas of Melbourne and Sydney. Even some of the more or the smaller towns like the Brisbanes and the Adelaides would have nowhere near the level of Wi-Fi that we've got. So Australia in particular would still be a fairly reliant on the GPS technology, I guess. So this is potentially where our telcos are working at the moment. You may or may not be familiar with the next generation of mobile technology rolled out here, the 3G network. The devices that we're currently using interact with satellites. So as you're walking down the street, your phone says, oh, okay, I know exactly where you are and can draw the maps on the screen, which you somewhat talk about. But I don't know in our country we're going to be that reliant, unlike North America, where I guess Wi-Fi is prolific. It's absolutely everywhere, from my understanding, isn't it?
Right, but you have a good point. I mentioned that if you have lots of Wi-Fi, I can use the Wi-Fi for even better location. But if I have a direct contact with a satellite, as you said, I can get the GPS signal can do a good job with that as well. And depending on the scenario, one potential advantage of Wi-Fi is that you might be able to do that with a little bit less power, so it would take a little less of your battery. But these days, that technology keeps improving, so these little radios are using a little less power. It keeps getting better. So just because you use that, it won't really burn too much of your cell phone. And, of course, we can use additional prediction technology, and we do a lot of that here at Microsoft, that as soon as we have a few data points in the history of how you're walking, for example, and we know where we are, then you can use those reference points to help you locate a little more precisely.
Rico, let's talk a little bit about computer technology, I guess, and where we're going to be heading in the future. I guess this has got a lot to do with the hardware and software that Microsoft's developing. The evolution of computer-based technologies in the past 20 years has been nothing short of spectacular, probably affecting us all and changing our lives in one form or another. Now, if Moore's Law is anything to go by, the next 10 years will certainly bring about changes in technology that most of us probably haven't even dreamed of. Can you tell us where you think we're heading?
You know, it's interesting because you said computing technology, and it will have some implications. One is that the computers themselves will get faster and faster. Now, instead of getting faster with more gigahertz, they will get faster with more cores. But it's still, Moore's Law is alive, and it's going to be for many years, so transistors will keep growing. And not only you will have faster computers and faster cell phones, because they're becoming little computers, and now already today a cell phone is more powerful than computers of, you know, 10 years ago, maybe not even that far away. And you will also see a lot more computing technology in other devices. I'd like to mention one example. Are you familiar with Round Table? Basically, it's a conference phone that has this little head sticking out of it on the top, which has an array of cameras. So if you cannot go to a meeting, you can actually log into that meeting from anywhere in the world using Live Meeting, and then that camera technology on the top of the conference phone will see everybody because it has 360 degrees view and provides to you in your laptop screen, wherever you're calling from, a view of everybody in the meeting. So it's a much more comfortable way for you to participate in a meeting. And there's a lot of computing technology that goes inside in terms of computer vision to make a good image out of this 360 degrees, localizing who's the person is speaking, and then amplifying that sound so you can hear clearly the person speaking. So a good thing is that you see devices behaving like computers themselves with a lot of intelligence built in, and Roundtable is kind of a first example of those.
Yeah, we're sort of starting to see a lot of hardware coming out now, which basically has its own self-contained processing power in it. We've seen it, I guess, in video cards for gamers and things like that and in previous times. But you bring up a good point, actually, interaction. You've spoken briefly about how we're going to be talking to devices. What other IOs, like at the moment we're used to tangible IOs such as a mouse and a keyboard, where are we going to go with these sort of IO devices? Are we really going to go down the identification through biometrics, and are we really going to be talking to our devices instead of typing?
Yes, and you see, for example, one of the interactions that we've been playing with, not something that we can ship now, but hopefully not in the far too distant future, is imagine back to the cell phone, which is super useful, and imagine you have one of those smartphones that has a good screen and then a few keys on the bottom, let's say, or maybe just a big screen and everything is touch. But suppose in that screen you're showing a map or some other picture that is interactive and you want to go in with your fingers and just point and move things around. One disadvantage is that our fingers are relatively big compared to the size of the screen. So as you're trying to touch things or point to things, they get in the way of you actually seeing what's in the screen. So we have this technology where basically with appropriate sensors in the back of the telephone, you actually move the fingers on the back of the phone, not in front of the screen, right? So, and what we do is we project a shadow of your finger on the screen, which doesn't really block what is being seen. So it's almost as if your screen were transparent and you're manipulating from the bottom instead of from the top. So you can still point to things and not block the view. So it gives a better kind of interaction in the tests we've made. But let me just add one more, is that the first impression we had is that if you're moving, trying to touch a picture from the back, right, because your fingers are in the back, first we thought that users would have difficulty getting used to that kind of interaction, but we ran a few tests, and actually they pick up very quickly, and it becomes a very natural thing. And once you get used, you actually really enjoy the fact that you now can move around, point to things, always seeing 100% of what you're doing. Nothing blocks your view.
Recently on Tech Talk Radio, we heard Ben-Hur Castro from Seagate in the United States talk about the new generation of portable hard drives, which not only backs up your files with the push of a button, it also password protects the contents of your drive. Not only does the Maxtor OneTouch 4 Plus provide backups, data storage and protection for your files, it also protects your entire computer system in case of disaster. Now for the good news. Thanks to Maxtor, Tech Talk Radio has a 1TB version of the OneTouch to give away to a lucky Tech Talk Radio listener. Anywhere in the world, value at $299. All you have to do is visit the Tech Talk Radio website and tell us in a few short words why you need 1TB of storage. How easy is that? We'll announce the winner on air on Monday the 16th of June. So what are you waiting for? Visit techtalkradio.com.au right now and you could be the proud owner of a 1TB OneTouch portable hard drive.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
We've been having a wonderful time here playing with Zoho, haven't we, boys?
This is going to work wonders for the Tech Talk Radio production process.
Whether it'll do anything for the show is another matter, but yes.
I'm glad you like my premature website of the week.
It's good. Is that your website of the week?
Okay, we're going to be.
Don't tell anyone. We'll keep it a secret.
We won't mention it.
Let's talk about some other things. In the news this week, Australia's IT banking revolution is here. Well, about time, some people would say.
Yes. What does that mean?
Well,
I'm already doing online banking.
Yeah, I know. But the bottom line is that, like all good IT things, things keep getting like built and stuck on top of old technology.
Yep.
Well, finally, the foundations of the banking technology and their old mainframes have finally got to pussy's bow, and as a result, they're full. And there's not much room to move, so they've finally decided. Well,
they still use those big old tape drives.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. I've been into the NAB's one here in town, and boy, that's a very sizable organisation, but that's, I've only seen, nothing. You know what I mean? They don't let people see those sort of things, so. And that was very impressive, and I didn't see anything. But it stands to reason that the internal machinations of Australia's most modern banking IT systems have long been built on top of antiquated architecture aligned upon overnight batch processing to complete the average banker's needs. But in this world of user connectivity and Web 2.0, banks are beginning to find that they have been left in the dark, while today's busy bankers demand more, as you do. Checks are a bit obsolete, aren't they, when you think about it? And in this day and age, when you get a check in the mail, you think, oh, God, now I have to go to the bank.
What do I have to do with this thing? Yeah, I've got to leave the house and fill out deposit slips and go and speak to a human, damn it.
I hate that.
You have a problem, you want to be a recluse, a social... When it comes to banks, I do. I really do. Yeah. I don't know when the last time was I stepped into a banking branch.
The last time I got a check. In fact, no, I actually used a teller machine to deposit a check the other night. There's something I haven't done for a long time.
I haven't done that for years.
Normally I use what they call the quick deposits. That's what the Commonwealth Bank call it. But I thought, oh, there's got to be a way. I went to the teller machine and said, yep, no worries. I'll just give me the check. And it went in and no hassles. It worked.
Well, you used to have envelopes and used to put the cash
in envelopes.
You put the deposit slip in the envelope and off you go.
Same thing applies, except you just whack the check in there and that gives you a little thing to print and stick it in and away it goes. Just disappears into the bowels of one of those machines.
And you open the drawer and get an envelope out and...
No, it came out. Where the cash came out, the envelope came out.
Oh, really? Is that how they do it now?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then where the cash comes out, the envelope goes back in.
That's it.
It's very tricky.
I haven't made a deposit at an ATM for probably 10 or 15 years.
Haven't you?
Oh,
we should get out more often.
Scary stuff.
Let's talk about Apple, shall we?
I don't save anymore. I just make withdrawals.
Yes, let's talk about Apple.
Apple to rule the home by 2013. This is what IT News have been saying.
Yeah, okay.
Adam, who's sending us emails by the truckload at the moment, will be going, yes, yes, bring it on. Apple is poised to become the hub of the digital home by 2013, according to a new study by Forrester Research. The analysts at the firm, Future Apple, examines how Apple products strategy will evolve over the next 5 years. Forrester predicts that Apple will offer 8 key products and services to connect PCs and digital content to TV stereo infrastructure in the consumer's home. Aren't they doing that already? Through proprietary software, which you can't plug anything else into, but
that's it.
Yeah.
So within 5 years.
Yes. A re-engineered Apple store will expand into home installation services. Oh, that'll be handy. They can plug it in for you. Deliver what Forrester describes as fully integrated digital experiences. Companies likely to be hardest hit by Apple's consolidated drive are PC makers like Microsoft and HP, which are going after the same consumer markets. Well, I must admit, Mr. Jobs does do the home consumer side of stuff very, very well. Don't you think?
Yeah, I guess.
You're going to stick with your media centre,
aren't you? I'm going to stick with my media centre. Yeah, I get more... The more functionality out of a PC connected as a component connected into the living room. Yeah, I don't know. You've got to with the Apple. Well, correct me if I'm wrong because I don't use the product, but with the Apple TV type product, the media streamer, you have to connect to an iTunes library somewhere on your network, and that's got disaster written all over it. God, I use iTunes as a catalog program, but. To have it completely take control of all of your music and all your videos, and that's the only thing you can use, it's taking over. I don't like it taking over the way it does. You know.
I sense your concerns.
It tries to do too much.
Does it?
Well.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see. But
I might be wrong. Let us know what you think. Feedback at tech.radio.com.au.
Australians are spending more time accessing media on the internet than they are watching television or movies.
Good.
According to another study. Lots of studies this week of more than 850 broadband users. The Connectivity Consumer Study commissioned by Cisco and conducted research by Illuminus surveyed 864 broadband users from Australia, 219 from New Zealand, 1,500 from Europe and 1,085 from the US to determine what influences their purchase of internet services and multimedia consumption. How about that? The study found that Australian consumers spend a week, on average, 22 hours surfing the internet. I'd agree with that. I spend a lot of my time surfing.
22 hours, quite a lot. Yeah.
8 hours listening to or downloading music and 3 hours gaming, contributing to a total of 47 hours conducting media-related activities online, either at home or at work. And this compares to just 14 hours in front of the telly. So they must be just watching the footy, a bit of news, catching up on the daily gossip, a bit of tabloid, and then go back to the online. Listening to us
back
online.
To the computer.
Isn't there evidence that people are doing more than one thing at once, though? It's like you might be watching the telly and browsing the web at the same time.
I'm a male. I can only do one thing at a time.
I tend to do both at once.
Oh.
Really? Probably not absorbing much of what's going on the telly, but never mind.
Only New Zealand, 48 hours. The UK, 47 hours. This is the people spending online. 48 hours in the New Zealand, 47 in the UK. 47 in the US. Beat Australia in terms of hours spent online each week. So we're not the best. We're not online the most. The Kiwis. Go Kiwis. What do you do in Kiwi land? I've seen the television over there. I know why they're online.
I saw a study during the week about how much time people spent on social networking sites.
Oh, you're
very similar to that study.
Really?
And some people said, oh, yeah, maybe an hour a day. And some people said, oh, yeah, 4 to 5 hours a day on MySpace. And
but that'd
yeah,
be
4 to 5 hours a day on
Facebook.
Wouldn't
that be in fits and bursts rather than one slab sitting? Because isn't...
I don't know.
Isn't
no, there's
social networking
tragics out there.
Facebook tragics.
Speaking of Facebook, Dr.
Look at me in that tone of voice.
How's your mobile going? You were updating. Are you still...
Yeah,
are
absolutely.
You feeling happy, feeling sad? Are you on... What are you doing at the moment?
I have to have a look. No, I still update from my mobile phone. I see my busy body and sticky beak into what everyone else is doing, or my other friends are doing. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. It doesn't... I get the impression that you think it takes up a lot of time, Andrew, but I just do it maybe spend 90 seconds while I'm sitting in traffic or if I'm... You know, at work or eating lunch or something, I'll just quickly update my status, and you can quickly see what everyone else is doing as well.
I wish I had 90 seconds of work to do that. That'd be good.
You can't be that busy, surely.
I turned the phone off today. It's amazing how much work you get done when you turn the phone off.
You must have been busy if you turned the phone off.
Yes, I turned it on this evening and sifted through all the voicemail messages and figured
that... Yeah, that's the penalty you pay, isn't it?
Figured that out of about 10 voicemail messages, 4 I had to get back to, so... dear. So, well, yeah, you're saying that it's not too bad.
It's not. I don't find it too bad, but as Graham's saying, yeah, there's some people that might spend 4 or 5 hours in front of the computer in one stretch, just social networking their lives away. It's a bit over the top, isn't it? But you do get distracted. There's a lot of stuff to keep you busy and keep you occupied. There's games and there's applications, all sorts of stuff you can do.
Absolutely. Samsung is an organisation that builds hard drives. They're bringing out a 1 terabyte green hard drive. Did you know about that?
Well, mine have been silver.
What's green about it?
Green about it? Samsung has unveiled the eco-friendly hard drive designed to minimise power consumption.
That kind of green.
That kind of green. The company... Well, computer stuff sucks a lot of power out of the wall.
Yeah.
Gets hot. What are you saying?
That's necessary. Yeah.
Vote one, global warming.
That's right.
Yeah, Dr. Graham.
Bring it on.
My cat's in great paper.
Cold anyway.
So, apart from the cynics in this room, yes, I think it's a good, damn fine idea. The company claims that the Eco Green F1 provides 15% power saving compared to other low-powered 1 terabyte hard drives and 50% power reduction against the traditional 1 terabyte hard drive. The device incorporates a 5400 RPM rotation speed, 3 gig SATA interface, native command queuing, and a 32 meg buffer. The Eco Green F1 can be used as an external drive or as an internal or PC desktop type sort of drive. Damn fine idea. Go
5400.
Thank you very much. I was just going to say the risk of getting too boffinish. 5400 for a SATA disk. That's slow, isn't it?
Yeah, but you can't. Yeah, it's got a
standard disks in your desktop now. 7200 or
flywheel.
And standard disks in faster machines are 10,000 or 15,000. 5400 is the old ones that were quite slow, although you still get them in the notebook size drives.
They're usually about... What we're talking about is the speed at which the platters in the disk actually spin.
But that has a flow-on effect to how fast you can get data on and off the disk.
Correct.
So, interesting.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our address if you would like to send us an email or an SMS to 0430 582077. If you're driving along, don't text while you're driving. It's bad for your health. And not to mention your back pocket. Also, Lydia Davis is a lovely lady. She lives in downtown Palo Alto, and she's our correspondent on Tech Talk Radio.
The Blogwell Cyber Goddess.
Absolutely. And some of the tags she sent over for this, I couldn't run to air even if I wanted to, but nonetheless, you'll get them, Dr. Ron, so you can cut some great things out of them for promos. But nonetheless, she's very much into social networking and those sort of things, Dig and StumbleUpon and those sort of things. And tonight we're going to have a bit of a find out about what Dig's involved, or what's involved with Dig.
She twits as well.
She does, although I think she's a bit frustrated with twitting at the moment, not unlike your good self.
I got frustrated with Twitter. Yes.
She was saying on the phone the other day that Twitter fell over in where their home in California there. Anyway, let me not steal any of her thunder. Here's our view from the couch. View from the valley.
From the blog.
She wanted a name for a segment. If you can think of a good one, send it in. The Valley Queen or something like that without getting into trouble. But here she is, her view from the valley, for want of a better term, all about Dig and how to dig effectively. And this is not with a shovel, you know what I mean?
Given we've talked about StumbleUpon, Delicious and Twitter on Tech Talk Radio over the past couple of months, I thought I'd talk a little bit about Dig, another social media site, mainly because I've been watching people try to use it, fail, and then complain about how sucky it is. Now, I'm not by any stretch a social media guru, but I do know most social media, and I know what works and what doesn't. More importantly, I know why it doesn't work. So if you've been submitting content to social media and it's just not getting any traction, consider these reasons for the big fat fail. Number one, ignoring the basic premise of social media. If you want to make social media work for you, you need to be social. This means that you make an effort to join in and participate in the community consistently, not only when you need something, like a dig or a stumble. In addition to involving yourself, take a look at who the top diggers, stumblers and twitterers are, and then take a look at what they're doing. It'll give you an idea of the stories that they like, that they vote on, that they submit. Get to know them. Trust me, they're social. The second reason for fail is that the content is average. Now, just because you've written a new post doesn't mean it's worth submitting to a social media site. Unless you've taken the time to put together a really great piece written for a specific social media site audience, don't submit it. Submitting everything you write looks spammy. and if you look spammy over a period of time, your site might get flagged. And this means anything, regardless of who submitted it, from your site will just end up being buried. The third reason for a fail is that the content doesn't fit the audience. The dig audience wants different content to the spin audience, who wants different content to the stumble upon audience, who wants something different from the Twitter audience, and so on. So if you want social media traffic, you have to consider the audience of that specific site, and then create content that they will love, and this means a lot of research. The fourth reason for fail is that not enough people know about it. So to get the traffic, people need to know about your post. And for people to know about your post, it's not enough to submit it to a social media site. It needs to either hit the front page or an upcoming page. And for this to happen, you need votes. The number of votes you need depends on the site that you're submitting to. But typically on Dig at this point, because they've made some changes to their algorithms recently, you'll need a couple of hundred votes, as well as comments in a 24 to 48 hour time frame if you want to hit front page. Compare that with Delicious, where 100 votes should do the trick. Obviously, you don't need to comment on Delicious. So unless you can generate that many votes in that time frame, it just might be smarter to ask a more influential user to submit your post for you. The caveat, of course, is don't ask them to submit crap. You'll only end up annoying them. Don't forget, they're an influential user for a reason. They don't submit junk. By the same token, don't be afraid to ask someone to submit stuff for you. Again, only if it's good. Influential users want new and interesting content. And if you can give them some, of course they're going to take it. But don't abuse it. Don't ask them to vote on every story, just the one that you've busted a gut on. Additionally, when something of yours does make it into social media, don't be shy with friends. Ask them to vote it up, but ask nicely. A quick IM or a tweet or a shout out saying, hey, check this out, I'd appreciate a vote if you like it, is okay if used carefully and in moderation. Don't go spastic. I get dozens of these requests daily and I'm about sick of it, and I'm not even a power user. Now, a word of warning. If you do write a targeted piece for a social media site, make sure that your server can handle it. It's not uncommon for front page dig stories to cripple servers. In fact, it's happened to me. For those listeners that don't know, a couple of months ago I targeted Dig as a site that could, if I did it right, help me get enough traffic and links to bring my Technorati ranking back up, which had tanked considerably after I moved my blog to a new URL. So here's what I had to think about, and this is before I wrote my first word. What are Dig users interested in? Who is the audience? Well, one thing they're interested in is technology. Technophobes don't use Dig. Sure, they might check it out on occasion, but few participate. Also, many Dig users write code, either for a living or as a hobby. Finally, the majority of Dig users are blokes, so I need to write something for developers that are blokes. The next step is thinking about what do developers need. Well, they need resources, all shapes and sizes, that will make their life easier in some way. Something that will save them searching. They also want quick access, bite-sized content. They don't want to spend an hour reading a 10-page article. The next step, of course, is to compile the list, and this is where many people give up. This list took a good 30 hours to compile. Finding content was easy enough for me. I love the web and I'm brilliant at hunting things down. Luckily, I'm married to a code nut and I enlisted his help at the editing process. I added subheadings to make it easier on the eye. I added images to make it more fun. For the first image, I had to consider what 20-something-year-old blokes liked. If you can't guess what it is, Google 100 resources for web developers, click on the first link and you'll see it. This post has now been dug over 2,000 times. It's been visited over 200,000 times, and yep, my Technorati rank shot back up. Blogwell is now considered one of the top 50k blogs out of the 112 million that Technorati track. Now, one more thing, I didn't submit this myself. I was lucky enough to have one of the more well-known diggers submit it for me. That, however, is another story, and I'll leave that for another time. This is Lydia Davis, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual power. And I've got some residual power.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a centimeter.
Your fingerprints.
Now, this...
We may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilos. Don't open hands with those good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Recently on Tech Talk Radio, we heard Ben-Hur Castro from Seagate in the United States talk about the new generation of portable hard drives, which not only backs up your files with the push of a button, it also password protects the contents of your drive. Not only does the MaxStor OneTouch 4 Plus provide backups, data storage and protection for your files, it also protects your entire computer system in case of disaster. Now for the good news. Thanks to MaxStor, Tech Talk Radio has a 1TB version of the OneTouch to give away to a lucky Tech Talk Radio listener anywhere in the world, valued at $299. All you have to do is visit the Tech Talk Radio website and tell us in a few short words why you need 1TB of storage. How easy is that? We'll announce the winner on air on Monday the 16th of June. So what are you waiting for? Visit techtalkradio.com.au right now and you could be the proud owner of a 1TB OneTouch portable hard drive.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The SmartQ T52 is a 4GB personal media player. It's a little handheld device that can play audio and can play video files. It can handle, you ready for all these file formats?
Yep.
MP3. OGG, O-G-G.
I remember that.
Yeah, I don't know. WMA, it's the Windows audio file. FLAC, F-L-A-C.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it
Lossless
either.
Lossless encoding, very cool.
Very cool, is it?
Really? Should get out more.
APE, A-P-E.
No, now you've lost me.
Okay, AAC, WAV, AVI, XVID, DivX, MPEG and MP4 files, just to name a few. It also features a video output, SDHC expansion slot, a 6-band equalizer and a 600 megahertz processor.
How big is it?
It's,
Can you get your fingers around it?
Size of the display, it's a 3-inch 320 by 240 resolution display with 16 million colors.
Wow.
It's also has an FM radio, TV out, AV in, a wireless controller for gaming as well, which will be sold separately. It's $175.
Gee, that's not bad.
It's not bad at all, is it? The SmartQ T52.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Hey, guess what this week's website is?
Hang on. Zoho.
Well done.
Hey.
The Zoho.com. Yes, I think we've well and truly covered this in the program.
Fantastic.
It's good to have a look at, though, if you haven't already seen it. It's an online office productivity suite. You can sign in using your existing Yahoo or Google accounts, or you can create a brand new Zoho account. There's Zoho Writer, which is a word processor. Sheet, Zoho Sheet, which is a spreadsheet.
That's what
online.
We've been using. It's real time.
Yeah. Very good. So you can share the documents with your
and collaborate
friends.
And chat. We were chatting to one another as we were updating our spreadsheets.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
In real time. There's also a Zoho Wiki. There's a Zoho Planner. There's even a web-based collaboration or chat feature. If you're not sure if you're going to have access to the internet all the time, applications like Zoho Writer will let you take your documents offline. And you can make changes offline if you want to, if you're worried. So
fantastic.
Have a look if that's the sort of thing you're into. Zoho.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Two Belgian beer fans have launched a video game named Place 2P, which allows players to slalom down ski slopes.
Why don't you take it down to this level at the end of each show?
Or... I'm talking about video games.
Okay.
It allows players to slalom down ski slopes or kill aliens while relieving themselves at urinals. Werner DuPont, a software developer, and his friend Bart Gerrits, an electrical engineer, told Reuters Television at a local festival last week that they got the idea while drinking Belgian Trappist beers. This thing had to be invented by Belgian people, and that's what we are, they said. The Place to Pee booth is designed for two users at a time and offers two games, blowing up aliens in outer space or skiing down a virtual slope. Gamers hit their target by aiming at sensors positioned on either side of the urinal.
Ah, dear. Toilet humour at the end of Tech Talk Radio.
Yes.
Well done, Doctor.
Did you buy it at like a game shop or do you have to download it or what do you
do? I think you install it in your toilets, in your restaurants or
wherever. You've been listening to Dr. Ron on Tech Talk Radio.
You're a disgrace, Dr. Ron. You really are.
Graham Callaghan and Andrew McComb. We may be back next week after rotten scoundrels behaviour like that. But in the meanwhile, it's been a pleasure. And we'll talk to you next week on Tech Talk Radio. The same station, same time in your headphones, on the train, on the way in, on the tube. Who knows? Wherever you might be listening. Thank you to everybody who's been sending us all these amazing emails this evening. It's been absolutely fantastic. And don't forget to enter the competition. You've got 2 weeks to go. You've got 1 terabyte on the table if you want it. So come and get it. Until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Panlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.